as far too many of you die.
I think anyone who puckers up their lips and presses it against their boss's buttocks and then smooches is an ass kiss.
I seem to be inept at everything except my work. I'm good at my work. So I confine myself to that. All I want out of life is a 30 share and a 20 rating.
The man's enlarged my mind. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense. I'm a little man. He's a great man.
Think of it as colors. There's black and there's white. And in between is mostly gray. That's us. Now, gray is a tough color because it's not as simple as black and white. And for the media, certainly not as interesting. But it's who we are.
Fan Radio Network and KFAN.com. 1 minute, 55 seconds past the hour, 3 o'clock Central Standard Time. It is a Wednesday edition of the Bumper to Bumper program on a nice and sunny mid-December weekday afternoon here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. I am the host of the program. My name is Dan Barrero, former Inkstained Wretch, newspaper of the Twin Cities. Gardzi is wanting to be sure he exhausts every single one of his remaining vacation days. He's out today, as he warned us yesterday. Brett Blakemore is back in that chair, and we are going, I think, till 6:15 today. Is that
correct?
So, not the full 3.5 hour tour, but a 3-hour and 15-minute tour this afternoon on the Fan. We'll give you details regarding our Borton Volvo scorecard today in just a minute or two. We'll remind you that you can email us presently via the Bradshaw and Bryant inbox, booth at KFAN.com. The talkback line is always available to you. We probably haven't used it enough this week, but I know Brett Blakemore will monitor. And if something tickles your fancy or you're bitter or you're excited, hit the talkback. And we will try to include that in our conversation today. We're guest intensive today, but there still might well be time to include you in the discussion. I mentioned off the top of the program that we are indeed your the local angle looming large in Boulder leader. There were rumors ever since the news broke that Deion Sanders was making an abrupt and quick move to take over the awful University of Colorado football program, that some other familiar names might be following. And anybody who's listened to this show will know by now that in this program, we have had a peculiar fascination with Tim Brewster, Basement Brew, not only while he was here, but after he left. Provided us, I would say, if I'm ranking characters who've given us the most sound bites, audio bite opportunities for the bit, Tim Brewster is probably, if not at the top of the list, he's absolutely top five. And one of the rumors is that Tim Brewster was sniffing around Boulder, Colorado, to become a member of Deion Sanders' staff. Now, I looked before the show. I don't think there's anything official on Basement Brew. If you find anything on Basement Brew, let me know. If those folks who have access to all sorts of sources have some information, pass it along to me via the Bradshaw and Bryant inbox. Be very curious to hear it. It does appear as if there's a good chance that Tim Brewster could land in Boulder. This would be, I think, his 17th different job in college football. Has not been a head coach since being summarily dismissed by the Gophers. He, I believe, was a head coach in the Hoosier Heartland Conference high school once upon a time in greater Indianapolis, Indiana. But let's be frank about this. If Brew joins Neon Deion Sanders, we'll be all over it. Might even be worth taking a look at Basement Brew's Twitter feed if there's any hint or inkling. But it goes beyond Basement Brew. We also have a fascination with the former head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, Mike Zimmer. The assumption being that Zimmer is going to sit it out, but then he's too much of a ball guy to not reinsert himself into the game as a coordinator, a defensive coordinator in the National Football League, and that somebody was certain to hire him for the National Football League this upcoming season, certainly. And if Larry Fitzgerald Sr. is right, he has the scoop. He has tweeted, Mike Zimmer will be Deion Sanders' defensive coordinator at Colorado. After he went 12-0 at Jackson State, he's got a couple of money bag emojis, pay raise, and fresh, clean drinking water. Now, have we seen that? Can you find that confirmed anyplace else so far?
I have yet to see anything confirmed, but a lot of according to reports, blank.
Yeah.
A lot of sources, blank. But I haven't seen any official releases that something's happened. I mean, Brewster did tweet out 4 hours ago, jumping on a plane to Boulder, Colorado. So,
oh, he did?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so that's out there. Okay, so he's not...
Unless it's a different Tim Brewster that I'm not aware of.
Is that the authentic? Is that a checkmark Tim Brewster?
This account is verified because it's notable in government. Okay, it's the real thing.
The real thing.
It's not a Twitter blue.
Okay. Well, that would certainly indicate he's not discouraging the notion that that's taking place. And what's interesting about Zim was as recently as yesterday, I had a highly placed but confidential source tell me Mike Zimmer's not going to coach college football. That's not Zim. It's not what he's into. He doesn't want to mess with a bunch of snot-nosed kids who are now making money. In some cases, maybe eventually might be making more money than him. And that's what would make this interesting, because my gut would have agreed to say, yeah, Zim's a pro guy. He doesn't want to mess with the rules and regulations of college football, and he's too cranky for, you know, he might be too cranky for everybody, but it's not a good match, not a good good blend. But money talks. Maybe the payroll, the budget that Sanders has been handed at Colorado is so obscene and so huge, and because of the relationship that they clearly have, the big-time relationship between Sanders and Zim, maybe he says, bleep it. I got nothing else for sure. I'm going to go join him in Boulder, even if it ends up being a one-year experiment.
Well, judging by that video that was put out when he addressed the team in his welcome meeting, he's not afraid to run a fear-based organization. So he told all the players to kick rocks and go to the portal. So maybe Zim would fit right in.
Here's one of the Brewster tweet, jumping on the plane to go... if I can read the rest of the tweet, see an absolute monster.
Yeah.
Hashtag play for prime. Again, did a compilation of all the Basement Brew tweets of just how wherever he happened to have landed that time with that job was a monster. That program was a monster, a sleeping giant. He's very used car salesman like in that regard, I must say, where you just you say, well, Brew could all of the if you've had like if you were committed to 9 different jobs over the course of like 12 years and all of them were the bestest thing ever, you think maybe you're losing a little bit of your authenticity in that regard. So he's back at it. So we could have we'll always follow the Gophers most at the top of the list, especially in the wake of the big news on PJ Fleck going from being on the edge of being fired, after the Iowa game, to getting yet another contract obligatory. I understand contract extensions. That's the way they work. Don't email me with that crap. I know all about it. But they're always going to be at the top of the list. But number two might be the Colorado Buffaloes. If they end up on the staff, Mike Zimmer and Basement Brew, who, by the way, to me, wouldn't be good drinking buddies. I don't see, I mean, to me, they're cut from very different cloth. But if they both end up with our own connections, this market to that, those two individuals, we're going to be all over it. We will be covering Colorado weekly, the trials and tribulations of the Colorado Buffaloes under Deion Sanders. And it might be a good reality show anyway, because the whole Sanders ascension is a hell of a story as well. So I'm reminded that, by the way, Brew was on Deion's staff at Jackson State already, which is a good point. So I guess that would be, but was he full-time on that staff? Even with Zim, Zim was like a consultant. So it was, I had a hard time knowing when some of these names popped up, were they there with him every day, or were they there only occasionally? I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. So we'll see how it goes. I'm very curious. I can't wait. We look for material on this show more than anything else, and I think the University of Colorado football program could be the gift that keeps on giving if these reports end up being accurate and both Basement Brew and Mike Zimmer are on the same staff at in Boulder, Colorado, for the University of Colorado Buffaloes and Deion Sanders. Here's the deal. We generally don't have guests early, but when we come back, we got one. Johnny Athletic, team player, graciously allowed us to change his schedule this week because of other big-time guests we had earlier in the week. So when we come back, it will be Johnny Athletic. Glenn Mason, according to the Borton Volvo scorecard, will join at 3:55, and we expect Pat Kessler in studio, if I'm not mistaken, right about 5:15 or so. Back with Johnny, and man, there is a lot of juicy stuff to get to regarding his, looks like, exclusive interview with Tim Connelly. What he learned there, I'm very curious to find out what the I guess you could say, the juiciest comment he got from Connelly. I do want to talk about another NBA issue absolutely continuing to be stuck in my craw. How about the Vikings being underdogs to the Detroit Lions? Disrespect. We'll talk to Johnny there. We'll talk to Johnny about the big contract news for PJ and who knows what.
The Fan.
Never, as we like to say in the business. Johnny generally joins either Mondays or Tuesdays, depending on the time of year. This week it's Wednesday. Who did we refresh my memory? You graciously agreed to step aside so we could insert who into your time slot.
Yeah, you know, Dan, there are times where I can put up a fuss and be offended by getting bumped from my normal slot, but being bumped for Bud Grant, I don't think is one of those times.
How
so if you're
going
to put on the Hall of Famer, the legend, I guess I got to cede control to him. He deserved it.
Yeah, that was yesterday. You're right about that. I for some reason, I was thinking that today, I don't know. You know me, the weeks come and go so quickly. I have no, they're all weekdays to me. And that's why it doesn't really matter whether we have you on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, or Friday. It just matters that we do get to you each and every week. And we were chatting at the start of the show about how there doesn't seem to be much question now that the University of Colorado is going to be my second favorite college football program that we're going to be spending a lot of time on, looking for sound bites, looking for controversies, looking for trouble. If indeed the published reports, Fitzy Sr., apparently with the scoop that Mike Zimmer, who served, I think, is in a kind of a consultant role in Jackson State for Deion Sanders, is going to join as the defensive coordinator. And Basement Brew, apparently, will in fact be joining, I assume, as tight ends coach and recruiter, something like that. And I was about to say, with a cheap shot, Bagman. But being a bagman is almost legal now, right? I mean,
that's right.
It's the beauty of it. It's a different kind of way you have to do it. But nevertheless, players are now getting paid. That's going to be a lot of fun. If that ends up being true and they both stay, I'm going to be looking. In fact, I wouldn't mind if every once in a while you checked in on that story.
I'm hoping that there's some sort of documentary, 30 for 30, whatever you want to call it, to follow the behind the scenes, because potentially explosive. My guess is, Dan, that old baseman Brew isn't going to be doing a whole lot of coaching.
Right.
He's going to be mostly on the road recruiting. He does seem to do a good job with that. And so maybe that's the way to kind of ensure that there isn't a knockdown, drag out, you know, brass knuckles brawl between the Zimmer, who's dyed in the wool football, just wants to talk football and nothing else, and baseman Brew, who speaks a different language, let's say. So it might be worth it, though. I might have to check in on that a little bit, maybe take a trip out to the mountains. It's beautiful out there,
and, yeah,
and see if we can stir anything up over there. It'll be fun.
I can't imagine an odder couple than Jim and Brew. That's the beauty of what and maybe that's the beauty of what Deion Sanders is putting together. Almost like he doesn't care what the rules are or who's he's the straw that stirs the drink, and everybody just sort of gravitates towards whatever he wants to get done. But I'm trying to think of like Brew and Zim sitting at a bar side by side. And I can't even imagine. I mean, my guess is it would be Brew would do all the talking. Zim would just, you know, like grimace and growl and grunt. Ew. And right. I mean, that'd be basically it. They speak such different languages.
They do. They're completely different people. You couldn't be on more opposite ends of the spectrum. But I will say this, Dan, one thing that I got to know about Zim when he was here, reverence and respect he has for Deion. Like, Deion's one of his guys.
That's true.
And so I do think that, you know, Deion will be able to maybe lead that staff, and I think he will command respect from Zimmer, obviously from Baseman Brew in his own way. And so I really think that it seems like Deion is a leader of men. And so that I think it does have a chance to work, but he is not going to pull any punches. And I think if he sees anything that's a problem, he's going to confront that. But I it just seems like with Deion, he might like that little bit of edge, that little bit of confrontation that happens in a staff like that.
Right.
Maybe it fuels things a little bit. So I could see Deion actually kicking back and watching the two of them go at it a little bit and thinking it's a good thing.
Obviously, the Deion pull is what would convince Zimmer to coach at a level I never thought he'd even have any interest in coaching. And I still think it's an odd fit. Maybe Zim is bored enough, desperate enough. They're going to pay him enough money. Or he just says, well, I'll do it for a holding pattern for a year until I feel like I can jump back into the NFL. I just don't think of Zim as a college football coach.
Well, yeah, the one thing, I mean, it certainly could be a stepping stone back to the NFL, absolutely. But also, I've always wondered this, Dan, if a guy like Zim maybe isn't suited for the college game because you deal with players for 2 or 3 years and then they're gone.
Yeah.
And then you have new players in. And so the chances of you really wearing a guy out maybe is a little less because they're gone before they can really get tired of getting yelled at like that. And so That's a possibility if you want to look at.
Well, you could make that argument. In fact, in the transfer portal era, even better, you could say, well, they might not even have to tolerate each other for longer than a year, the player and the coach. So, on the other hand, then there's some players like we've had a few who stay 6 years, and I'm not sure that would be very healthy with Mike Zimmer. That's a very good point.
I don't
think
you'll see too many 6-year linebackers at the University of Colorado.
Okay, so let's stay with college here now that we're on that particular subject. The story breaking, I think it was earlier today, University of Minnesota announcing that PJ has inked a new 7-year contract that is worth apparently $6 million per season. His pay gets increased by $1 million per year. And now the contract will run through the 2029 season. His most recent new contract was a year ago, November 4, 2021. These have become, I guess, to a certain extent, standard operating procedure. I don't know what the outs are. I don't know what the buyouts are. Maybe they are even more favorable to the Gophers in that regard. So do you just accept the notion, look, this is the way it works, for better or for worse, this is the way it works? Or do you say to yourself, there's just a nagging feeling that it's not the greatest look, even after an 8-victory season, when you squander the best opportunity the University of Minnesota has probably had in 30 years to actually win a Big Ten division title.
You know, I really look at it this way, Dan. Really, when you break down the contract and what this one is versus the old one that he had, it's essentially a one-year extension. And so this is the necessary evil of college coaching contracts, because you want to project the stability for recruiting. It's all built toward recruiting. We have to show that we're behind this guy, and so he can recruit years on out. I don't like it. I think that college coaches have institutions over a barrel, and I think that in general it can be very problematic in the way that these contracts get perpetually extended. That said, for PJ Fleck, I think he's a good coach. I think he's the right coach for Minnesota. I don't think that he needs to be fired. I don't want to see them move on and go find someone else. And the first, unfortunately for colleges, the first time you don't do something like this, that is the first step toward a divorce eventually. And so if you like PJ Fleck, if you think that he is the long-term solution here for a very good program, and you hope that he takes another step and it becomes great, then you hold your nose and do it. It kind of stinks that that's the way that it is, but I don't want to see PJ Fleck go anywhere. I don't think he should go anywhere. So you probably just have to suck it up and make this stuff happen.
You know, you've articulated sort of the catch-22 that programs are in, that they are, there's the way it's set up, the way the college football machinery is set up. You almost have to continually do this. And yet I do think on the detrimental side, one of the results is more likely that coaches continue to encourage the notion that they should be worshipped. And when you feel like you should be worshipped, that's why you pretend after beating Wisconsin, conveniently, by the way, you don't bring that up until then, after you beat Wisconsin, you pretend that there was this onslaught that you were dealing with the week before after you lost to Iowa. It's because these guys, we again, I don't know how you make the exception, because if you do, then you might lose a guy. But all of that, I think, nurtures exactly why these guys get, all of them, not just PJ, all of them get so bleeping full of themselves, like they really do think they're changing lives.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing that was disappointing from hearing PJ say that was that you have gotten nothing but support from the university. You know, Mark Coyle has been firmly in his corner, and maybe there's been a little bit of grumbling in the media about not winning a big game here or there, or maybe slightly disappointed in the way that the Gophers didn't deliver on a very promising season this year. But all in all, it's been a very welcoming environment, I think, for PJ. And so if a coach like PJ, who has been welcomed, who has been supported for the most part, like he has, you know, kind of has that feeling, that does show that, you know, maybe the college machinery still does produce God complexes in their coaches. And again, I'll say this, is I like PJ. I think he's a good leader. I think it's a good program that he's building, and I think stability is the right thing for these Gophers. But I just didn't see any reason, other than maybe some grumbling on message boards, that PJ should ever have felt like there was anyone saying it's time for him to go. Certainly the Chip Scogginses of the world weren't writing that. Stuart Mandel for The Athletic wasn't writing that. So I just didn't see where that was coming from. And if it gets to a point where you are obsessing over the Twitter comments, over Gopher Hole, over those things, then I think you got to have a conversation with yourself and reevaluate what's getting under your skin. And maybe this just has to happen for PJ in the off season or something like that, because there's just no reason for him to feel that aggrieved right now because it's just, it hasn't been that way for him.
His greatest, none of even his greatest agitators were calling for his head. It's just mindless, stupid. It's like I said, it's I want to be worshipped a little more than I've been worshipped before. That's basically, I think, exactly why he went down that road he did. And as I said, he waited conveniently till after he was sure that he had a Wisconsin victory in the books. Let's get a pause in. I want to talk to you about your conversation with Wolves chief brain wizard Tim Connelly. I also want to talk about the Minnesota Vikings. I have one other pro basketball subject that I think is fascinating that I want to discuss with you. Johnny Athletic for a second segment. Don't forget, Glenn Mason will join at the top of the hour. We'll get his reaction to the contract extension news.
The Fan.
Check out the Friday Football Feast this week at Buffalo Wild Wings Edina. Doors open at 8 ahead of a live 9 to noon broadcast with PA charge. Cast of characters. Find a full list of dates and locations, KFAN.com. Keyword events.
Bitterness, fear, and loathing pouring into the Bradshaw and Brian inbox after that first segment with Johnny Athletic, who's back for another. I do want to get to some other things, but I hit the wrong button. Sorry, my bad. I'll go to the other one. This would be the one I got to hit. Johnny, are you there?
I am here.
You could have had me right there if you wouldn't have answered.
I would have been over
nice
a barrel.
Right now, Dan.
Yeah, you are. That's true.
Yep.
A couple emails have come in, unhappy with both of us, I think, to varying degrees.
Gopher fans unhappy? No way.
This is from emailer Joe and Wyzetta. Subject line, Johnny Athletic, pure BS. The institution is not over the barrel. The taxpayers are. Dan, you have it right. PJ is a spoiled huckster. Performance does not equate to his ego or salary. Do you plead guilty or innocent?
I plead innocent. Like, let's live in the actual reality of the world, please. Like, college coaches get paid this much money at Big Ten institutions. And
they get paid more, actually.
The taxpayer thing is ridiculous.
They get paid more.
It's coming out of the and they get paid a lot more. I mean, you're seeing $9, $10, $11 million salaries per year for these guys. I don't agree with it. Do I think $6 million is too much for a college football coach? Probably. But that is what you have to pay if you want a competent program. So you can have debates about all sorts of different things with it.
Yeah.
But let's just please live in the reality of the situation. Because in a perfect world, you'd say, PJ, earn it every year, year to year. And if you don't, you're out of here. That's not how it works, man. This is not real life. So Joe and Wyzetta, wake up, man. It's not the way we do things around here.
It may be, I don't want to speak for Joe, but it's possible part of what he's saying to us is, he's not good enough for us to feel obligated to play the same game. And I can at least have that debate. I tend to agree with you that the last thing I want to do is quote unquote start over. I don't deny that it sticks in my craw that it's this automatic thing a week and you know, 2 weeks after he's whining, he's inventing the notion that he's under some kind of siege when he has not been. So morally, it bugs me. I think morally, it bugs you to that extent. But that's sort of the world you're living in. For example, this is more for me. This is from Eric. Subject line, PJ leveraged the deal. You're really going to miss that PJ complained about possibly being fired and then a week later gets a new contract? $20, says his agent, told PJ to say that. Now, I had a tweet that was snarky on this issue that was kind of tongue-in-cheek, because if he is suggesting that without the comments from PJ that there would be no potential for a contract extension today, I think he's flat-out wrong. I think that was going to happen anyway. I had the comment about, you know, in this case, martyrdom pays, literally, just because I'm annoyed by the whole thing, and martyrdom often does pay among college coaches, but I don't think there was any kind of conspiracy here. Coyle was going to do what he was going to do, regardless of whether PJ said something moronic after the Iowa game.
I totally agree. This is just the natural calendar of how you have to do these things. And if Mark Coyle had heard those comments and then came cowering to PJ, I'm so sorry, PJ, we love you. I'm sorry you feel that way. And what can I do to help you? And he says, well, give me a contract extension. Okay. That Mark Coyle should be fired for that. He obviously did not do that. This is how these deals work. You have to keep extending it out year over year for optics, for recruiting, for all those things. And so if PJ would have got up after Wisconsin and said, you know what, we didn't do a good enough job. Like, I didn't do it. I have to beat Iowa. Those fans are right for being upset with it. He still would have got the extension. That's just the way it goes.
All right, let's get to Tim Conley. You had a chat with him. What did you do you believe is the most interesting or provocative thing that he had to say to you?
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a ton provocative, Dan. I do think that people right now, understandably so, are really concerned about the Rudy deal. And they probably would love to hear him say, we made a huge mistake and we've got to change this. And that's not what he was ever going to say in this, but he also was kind of preaching the patience that we expected. It's been 22 games, 23 games. We need time to figure this out. He still believes in this. He believes that Rudy's still a great player. So all of that was predictable, and understandable on his part and reasonable. I think one thing that did strike me, in our conversation is he did at least acknowledge the real concerns and the consternation, saying, look, we're not going to hide our head in the sands about this. It hasn't worked out as well as we anticipated it. And so he was at least forthright with that. He did say, it's not the coach's fault. It's not the player's fault. Put this on me. I'm the one that assembled this team, and I have to be the one to examine how we kind of go forward with it. So there was some personal accountability and at least some acknowledgement that it has not lived up to expectations yet. But for people who wanted to, you know, hear him have a mea culpa, have him say that this is never going to work and we've got to punt on it, it's just that's not going to happen. And he did not do that in our conversation.
Do we have any change in the timetable for Cat? Does it still appear to be 4 to 6 weeks, or do we know anything more now than we did when the injury was first announced?
Yeah, no, it's still a 4 to 6 weeks. There is some, I would say, hope internally that, you know, Towns historically has been a fast healer, and he does want to get back out there and play. So there is hope that it's on the shorter end of that window, but there's also a real concern that calf injuries like this, if you don't give them full time to heal and you're not 100% when you get back, they can lay the foundation, or they can set the trap for Achilles injuries, for knee injuries, of a much more significant nature if they are not all the way healed. So I do think that they are going to be cautious with this and make sure that he's good to go before letting him back out there, because we've seen Kevin Durant of the world and others have real significant injuries right after coming back from this calf strain. So they're going to be careful with it, but they definitely are hoping that he'll be back sooner than later in that window.
Should the Vikings be offended that as a 10-2 team, they are, at least for the moment, no matter how, you know, betting lines work, they are underdogs going to Detroit to take on the Lions?
Yeah, you know, I thought earlier in the year, Dan, I was on this radio station banging the gavel saying, how could they be underdogs to Dallas Cowboys when Dallas was coming into their house and coming off of a loss and the Vikings were flying high, and look what happened there. So that was the latest in many, many, many instances that, hey, maybe Vegas knows what they're talking about. And so Detroit is playing good. They're feisty. They're fighting teams. They just had a really impressive win over Jacksonville. So going on the road, the Vikings get by on the skin of their teeth like almost every week. I'm not surprised that they are small, small underdogs in this. And I don't know that the Vikings should be offended either. They should look at this as like, these ain't the same old Lions. If we don't come in here with a real edge and a real competitiveness about us, they could get beat. I think the Lions are the best team they're going to play the rest of the regular season. And so they better be ready or else they'll get a loss.
Yeah, I was about to say, this is their toughest opponent the rest of the way. At Chicago last week of the season, at Green Bay the week before, who knows who's playing then, hosting the Giants, who are weird, but fading, and then hosting the Colts. Yeah, this is that. And you can say, well, this is better for us. It's fuel, and man, look at our record. Our record is our record. But if your record is been fashioned the way it has been fashioned, it's not illegal, but it's going to filter and factor into the way people evaluate your club and how much confidence they have against any given opponent. They're sitting here with a point differential now at plus 10 with a 10-2 record, which is almost historic. And so that's going to feed that. You know, it doesn't mean they're terrible. It doesn't mean they can't make a run, but it means I put it to this way to Vikings fans. If we were evaluating any other team but the Vikings, and they had a 10-2 record, but they were plus 10 in point differential and had won the way they'd won, what would most people be saying? They'd say, well, yeah, it's a heck of a run, and they're really good in close games, but I don't know. I mean, can I completely trust it? I'm not quite sure. That's what we would be saying, correct?
100%. And you look at it, too. Like, I continue to be legitimately concerned about this defense.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
You know, when they win with Kirk Cousins directing an offensive possession and coming up big with Justin Jefferson down the stretch, I'm not really that surprised anymore. They have the talent to do it, and they are showing time and time again they are capable of doing that. When the defense just pulls rabbits out of their hat, that seems to be a little less sustainable. And you just wonder about what is the ceiling on this team? Where is this team going? And what is their ability? And this is the way that I describe the Vikings right now, Dan. I'm going to give them all sorts of credit for the guts, for their resilience, for the way that they pull these games out. But I absolutely see a scenario unfolding where they could win the Super Bowl this year, and I'd still say, yeah, I don't know if they're that good. Like, that's just kind of the way that they're going about it. I give them all the credit in the world for finding ways to win, but they're doing it in a manner that you would be silly not to at least have a little bit of reluctance or hesitance about, man, can they really keep this thing up? Can they really keep going like this?
They're not even in the top half in terms of points allowed per game. You look at the teams at the top, San Francisco is one, Dallas is three, Buffalo is four, even Tampa is five, the Jets are six, the Eagles are eight. Almost every team, other team with a good record, you're in that range, and they're down in the 20s. And so I'm with you. I felt for a while, going even back to last Friday, that's what I need. They need to batten down the hatches. This notion that you can give up 800 yards a game as long as you stop them in the end sounds good, but it actually works against your offense even being on the field, and I think it'll catch up with you. We'll see where it goes, but I think it is worthy still of a concern. We appreciate the flexibility this week. We will chat next week. Thanks, Johnny.
All right, thanks, Dan.
That is John Athletic. We've got Glenn Mason to talk about the big PJ Fleck contract extension news, which is probably not all that unexpected. Does he buy the notion that this is the game, the way it has to be played? Has Glenn Mason separated himself enough from the coaching profession to be objective on this particular issue? Because he tells me now he's a member of the media. He's been out more than 10 years. So maybe he can be objective on that very issue. We'll talk to him about that, some other college football controversies as well. Mace in your face.